Time is 16 minutes past the hour of 8. A very good morning if you've just joined us. This is 101.9 High FM. The future of work, leadership, blind spots. How do we avoid them? Ian Bessarabi, very good morning. Welcome back. We had a tremendous response following last week Tuesday's session on the future of jobs. Today we want to talk about leadership blind spots. What are the most common leadership blind spots there that we are likely to encounter?
Thanks for having me back, Howard. And it's certainly such a diverse and interesting topic, but, leadership hasn't evolved as much as it should have. And I think some of the blind spots are just continuing and just doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Mm-hmm. And some of the blind spots are not, looking at the full potential of your staff complement and really, encouraging diversity in the workspace. So
when we're focusing on blind spots today, we're really focusing on jobs, staff, employment, HR. That's what we're focusing on today. Is that correct?
Yes. It's very much about people coming into a certain box or into a certain mold, and that's how we've been conditioned, and leaders have been conditioned to look for certain types of individuals to fulfill roles.
Right.
And I think that's so short-sighted in the sense that we are missing such a big segment of the community. And that's really a shame because you miss such rich talent because you just kind of focus on going for what we're comfortable with.
Right. And in fact, I used to notice this tremendously in the commodity trading industry is that people always assumed you had to be a certain type of brash youngster and fit into the right type of suit and the right image, etc. And what my experience actually showed was some of the best salespeople, some of the best marketing people didn't fit into that box at all. In fact, they might have been quite the opposite, but somehow they would write more business than anybody else.
Absolutely, and I think the fact that you don't give people like that an opportunity to show their full potential limits an organization from, as you say, having the best sales person or the best trader on the floor.
Incredible. So what are the blind spots?
So I think some of the blind spots are just not acknowledging that you have problems in your organization. And when I say not acknowledging it is trying to mold people into something they're not. And what you do is, there's a fascinating, TED talk and some research that's done and that's spoken about. And they talk about how we become unconditioned from our creativity when we go to school. And then we spend hours and hours after we're in the workplace trying to get our creativity back. The reality is it's a shame because we go through our whole careers being told how to do things, how to fit into a box. And because leaders are fearful about letting individuals or people be their true selves, people get frustrated. So you don't have great employee satisfaction. You don't have people that want to go the extra mile because they feel constrained. So that's a big blind spot from leaders is not acknowledging that they've got a problem.
What's interesting is, and I think we've spoken about this before, that Malcolm Gladwell speaks about the success of people that are dyslexic, for example, and how a higher number of dyslexia sufferers go on to tremendous success. And I'm wondering, as you're speaking about this, if part of the reason for that isn't maybe because they've never fitted into a box and they haven't allowed themselves they couldn't be curtailed because they didn't fit into that box in the first place. And I wonder if because of that, they've gone through the whole of their schooling and haven't had themselves curtailed and stifled. I'd love your thoughts on it as well. Please enter into our conversation 34519 or 0618951019. We'd love to hear from you. Ian, your thoughts?
So Howard, just to pick up on the point about dyslexia, they say some of the best leaders in the world were dyslexic or are dyslexic. And the reason for that is because they're not capable of accomplishing certain things. They surround themselves by good people or even people that are better than them. So if you look at a good leader, that's somebody who has the time to really focus on the important things and allow other people, feel comfortable allowing the other people to do the jobs or for
and aren't
the
insecure, actually.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, they're not insecure about hiring somebody with better skills in certain areas to what they have. So, how does one encourage change in leadership? You know, a lot of CEOs are there in that position because they have actually played by the rules of a particular organization. And we always speak about written ground rules and unwritten ground rules. And successful people within organizations are ones that are able to pick up on what those unwritten ground rules are, play the game better than somebody else in order to get into the position. The problem is once they are in that position, they're reinforcing the same same environment over and over again. How do you break that cycle?
So I think it boils down to something quite simple. It's take a risk and be true to yourself. And what I mean by that is that when you're a CEO, you're in a role of leadership, and you're there to make tough decisions. And some of those decisions are not always going to work. But you have to take a position. You have to take a position, and you've got to stick by it. And I brought out a fascinating example, and this actually comes out of Israel, and they found a solution to address this problem.
Tell us.
So, I think the most exciting thing about this is what they've done is they've taken what we would typically call a segment of the community that have been excluded or previously excluded from conscription and joining the RDF, but also from normal working life. And they've taken young teenagers who are on the spectrum or are autistic. That on the spectrum is a word that they use. It's a word to describe autism. And what they've done is they're giving them a shot at serving their country as part of what they've called a Roim Rachok program. Now, Roim Rachok basically means looking ahead, loosely translated, looking ahead. And the RDF actually call it their secret weapon. And what they've done is they've created a highly skilled and trained elite squad of soldiers who can use their skills and their diversity in terms of their ability to read satellite images, to use their visual capabilities to actually help the RDF.
So they've actually taken kids, or they've taken young adults who don't fit in to the standard norm, and they're utilizing, that sounds utilitarian. I mean, they're not utilizing them, but they've created an environment for them. And that obviously flows both ways because they are contributing, but they're also valued.
Absolutely. And the most important thing is they're not just, exactly to your point, they're not just utilizing them for their skills. They're actually helping them to develop a wider range of skills so that once they leave the RDF, they can actually go with confidence and with skills in order to join the workplace. And some of them have become exceptionally successful because through their time serving and being proud of what they do in the RDF, they've been able to build their confidence and take that forward into their family lives and into their business lives.
The question, of course, is how you translate that kind of a model, how a corporation takes that, you know, when a corporation is slightly different in that they're worrying about bottom line, they're reporting to shareholders, they're reporting to directors. It's quite difficult to have the courage, to initiate one of these, programs.
I agree with you, Howard, and I think the most important thing is that leadership needs to appreciate the importance of each individual employee. And that's something that we haven't addressed yet. We kind of look at this herd mentality, and for some industries it works, but I think as we're talking about the future of work, that's going to become less and less important, is because you're not going to need I don't know how many people remember typing pools, but you're not going to need a whole bunch of people that can type at a million words a minute or whatever it was. You're going to need people that are unique, that are different. And if leadership don't break from their current routines, if they don't acknowledge that they have to look at individuals and they have to support them. And it's all about an experiment. You know, this program that the RDF started was actually started by three Mossad agents, as it was started as an experiment. And 6 years later, it's got an 86% success rate. So you have to start somewhere. And I think the fact that you don't go and turn your organization over 360 degrees, you've got to, 180 degrees, you've got to make sure that you start somewhere. And I think it's by taking action. And in the same way that the RDF took a bold move by bringing kids and teenagers that would have been kind of sheltered, if I can call it that, and precluded or assumed they wouldn't add value. Absolutely. And they've taken, something that we would have all perhaps considered as something totally off the charts or something that nobody would consider, and they've turned it into a success. So, I think it's about being bold as leaders, and it's also about acknowledging that the past doesn't necessarily reflect what the future is going to be.
Absolutely fascinating. I'd love your thoughts on 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Ian, so this is all interesting in theory. Now I am driving in my driving. I've dropped my kid at school, and he's certainly a kid that doesn't fit into the box. What's his future or what's her future? How do we as parents try and maximize the talents and the gifts of one of our children or somebody we know that might not be that conventional child?
So Howard, I think just the example that I used just before the break about what Israel's done, specifically IDF, gives a lot of hope to parents, and that includes myself, that there are opportunities. And for me, parents that, as you say, are thinking about their kids and worrying about the future should rather turn their thought process around and look at what the opportunities could be for their kids. And if their kids are different, and if their kids do not fulfill the structured role and the structured kind of career path that everybody hopes their kids can go on, that's not a bad thing. It's an important thing to encourage diversity. And just as an example, I know we've used autism, which is on the increase. I think it's not something that's going away, and I think it's becoming something more aware. We've got challenges where our education system is under pressure because they're not catering for children or teens and that are on the spectrum. But just in general, kids are finding it a struggle to try and be themselves, but at the same time assure their parents and everyone that they're going to be successful. They will be successful, and why they'll be successful is because they'll be following purpose. If you spend time doing something you hate, you will fail at it. But if you do something you enjoy, and if you recognize, I think recognition is something that we don't do enough of. We don't recognize individuals for what they do, because we project our expectations. And by doing that, we kind of then become disappointed. So for those parents or those out there that are looking at it, encourage your kids.
Absolutely. And, I mean, the question, of course, is how to go about doing that. And, it's also tempting, you know, the same as our kids have this push and pull between, you know, sort of fitting in and becoming part of that in crowd and still knowing that maybe they're a little bit different and maybe they can stand outside, outside of it. But at the same time, we the same. We all want, you know, whether we like it or not, we seem to want that for our children. Absolutely. You know, and I get it. I do understand that.
Yeah. I think that's where you've got to try and find this win-win situation. And I know everybody says that's a little bit esoteric, but it is possible. I think we can find a way where we can allow our kids and that to be themselves and still be proud of them, even if they don't do things that we want them to do. And it's a tough one.
And I guess the question is, and we're going to talk to Stephen Ambrose now about things tech, but when we come back, what I'd like to understand from you is that business environment changing? You know, you've given us an example of the IDF, the Israel Defense Force. There it seems to be changing. But is business changing to accept diversity? And by diversity, we are not just simply talking about race, religion, and gender. We are talking about people that are truly a little bit different. It is 8:35. I'd love your thoughts on that. Is business going to change? Are we going to adapt? And it's all very well that you and I sit in studio and all of the those who are trying to plot this and understand this and see the benefit of real diversity in business. It's all very well that we see it. Is business going to see it?
I don't think business has a choice, Howard, and having worked with a lot of startups and taking some of the positives and unique elements out of a startup. If business, and I'm talking about corporate business now, just to clarify, if they don't include people and they don't bring diversity in the terms of not just having yes people, you know, yes people coming in and agreeing, and allowing people to speak their minds, they're not going to untap the potential or the good ideas and all of that. So I think it is changing, but it's changing in pockets because as I've always said to many people that I work with, is that this is not a revolution, it's an evolution. We've got to go through a situation where organizations, big organizations, are like oil tankers. You don't just turn the thing around in a couple of seconds like a speedboat. That's for the startups to do. So they are doing it, but I think one of the key things for me is there's a fabulous book that I encourage everyone to read. It's called Skin in the Game. I don't know if you've read Skin in the Game, but I've got to get the author now. I had it. It's written by Nassim Taleb, whichever name you prefer to go by. And he talks about Skin in the Game being about everybody has to have a stake. And what leadership are finding is that if they give a stake or they give something to the employees that they've got the risk of losing, they have more productivity. So one way of incentivizing individuals to be different, to think out of the box, is to hold them accountable. And that comes from two elements. One, making them accountable for an idea. So you don't just be a spectator in the grandstand telling everybody how bad things are. You actually commit yourself and getting involved, and you've got something to lose. So people are committed to following up on their ideas, demonstrating that they stand behind their ideas. And through that authenticity, you then get far more productivity, and leadership are more willing then to allow people to think out of the box, is because they know people will not go off on a limb and put their integrity at risk.
Fascinating. What are your thoughts? 34519 or 061-895-1019. I guess it's much easier that this kind of a push comes from the startups, because it's new, that they're forging a way ahead in a different sort of a way. I guess ultimately that is how business changes, is it comes from the newbies, and then the old guard looks at that and says, hold on, that's a good idea. We like that and we like that.
Absolutely, and I think that's what we're going to see, which is so exciting. And I hope everybody sees this as not negative. You've got to see it as exciting, is that we're entering a new age of leadership, and we're also entering a new age of workforce coming through. You know, everybody has been talking about the millennial generation and the millennials and what millennials are going to do. Millennials are leaders now. When we talk about leaders, I think everybody's a leader. I'm talking about people that take senior positions within organizations. Millennials are now leaders, but the irony is that they're not ready for the future, the next generation, who are very different. Those are your 15, 16-year-olds now who are going to be in the workforce in the next 5 years. They're going to have different expectations. So it's so critical that we have open discussions, open dialogue, and we make sure that it's a win-win situation for everyone.
And of course, the interesting thing is, you know, we often laugh at the millennials, and we laugh at Generation Z or whatever it would be, because they're coming from a completely different perspective. But the reality is, unless we meet them some way, we're not going to be able to get the best out of them within the workplace. They do bring their own skills. They do bring their own value. But at the same time, they do have to conform some way to living in a more conventional environment.
Absolutely, and I think that's where it all boils down to what I simply say is mutual respect. Mutual respect is something we tend not to be too sympathetic to, or we don't empathize with people, right, understanding their needs, but also on the other side, they've got to understand that there's certain rules. And responsibilities.
Yeah, and that's, of course, the most difficult balance. I think that any new CEO, any CEO in the next couple of years is going to have to work very, very hard to balance that, to try and as you say, empathize, recognize feelings, because that is traditionally something that we've kept out, or we've thought we've kept out of a workplace. The reality is that we haven't at all. We've just found ways to mask them. But at the same time, you breathe too much life into that, and it becomes absolutely unworkable, unplayable, and unproductive. So that balance is actually a very, very difficult balance. And the CEO who gets that right, I believe, is going to be the successful CEO of the future.
Absolutely. And I think there's one thing I'd like to finish off on is everybody spends so much time on the environment, the work environment, and that is critical, but we spend so much time on just making sure that the workplace looks good and everybody can put a fresh coat of paint and make things look funky and innovative. But it's really about the experience. If an employee comes in and they feel like they're having a good experience, they'll want to come back. So it's less about the environment and more about the experience.
Absolutely right. That's where we leave it. Ian Bessarabi, thank you as always. Fascinating conversation.